Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times and the Poynter Institute. On this podcast, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses your stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm a former enterprise editor at the Times. Today's topic: driving headlong into a sunny Eden. So this is one of my favorite stories of how you found a story. Can you tell everyone about this?
The photographer John Pendergraft and I were following three women through drug court. And one of the young women had gotten a job at a pizza place, but she'd lost her driver's license. So she's riding the city bus. And she basically said, "You guys should ride the bus with me one day to work. Like, all these people on the bus offer you oxys. And it's really hard to stay sober when people on the bus are like offering you pills." So we're like, "Oh, that'd be a good scene for the story, you know, and kind of show her resisting temptation or whatever." So we got on the bus with her, and we were probably on the bus for, I don't know, half an hour. And there was maybe another 15, 20 minutes to go. And this little couple across from us, there's hardly any people on the bus, especially in the morning here. And this little couple on the bus across from us was so cute. And they just kept kissing and kissing. And the boy was kissing the little girl's eyelids and patting her hair. And the girl was like snuggling up in his sweatshirt. And she had a Hannah Montana backpack. And he had like little Air Jordans. And they were just so, so cute. And we were eavesdropping, of course, as we always like to do. And so they were, Stacy, the girl we were following, wasn't really talking to us. She was sort of half asleep on her commute to her pizza place. So we were listening to this little couple. And they were saying things like, "What's that? Oh, my God, it's like on SpongeBob. Look, it's a scooper bird. Look at that. What is it? Oh, I think it's a pelican, like from Finding Nemo." You know, and they were so, their conversation was so childlike and like just in, like unbelievable that they were in this place seeing these things. And John, the photographer, said, "You guys are so darn cute. Do you mind if I take your picture?" Because she was kind of like sitting up in his lap and snuggled in on him. And he was like holding her hair and they were both peering out the window. And they were like, "No, no, you can take our picture, whatever." And he took a few pictures of them. And then we just started chatting them up, you know, and they told us they had left Wisconsin like 2 days before on the Greyhound bus, pulled all their money from working at the Wendy's and ran away. They were 18 and 20, ran away from Wisconsin because they were tired of being cold, tired of shoveling snow, and they'd always wanted to see Florida. So they ended up taking the bus all the way across the country with like a half a pack of Marlboro Reds and a bottle of water and trying to find Florida, trying to find the beach in Florida. So by the time we found them, you know, they obviously crossed into Florida and transferred from the Greyhound to a city bus, and they were trying to take the bus to the beach. But they didn't really know where the beach was or how to get there. So they were like, "We're on a mission. You know, we're going to find the beach for the first time. We want to have our feet in the water." And John and I looked at each other and were like, "Oh, yeah, we're coming. Oh, yeah, this is a better story than following Stacy. Stacy will go to work at the pizza place tomorrow. You know, we can come back and do that. But this, we're going to follow these Wisconsin kids to the beach." And they were, I mean, amazingly willing to share their story and so freaking excited to be there. And in just in wonderland of what Florida was out the window of the bus, you know.
What made them open up, do you think? Because I can imagine, like, you meet a stranger on a bus and they say, "I'm a reporter and I want to follow you around." Like, I wouldn't have let you follow me around, Lane.
I think they were so excited. You know, they were just so excited to be doing, they were willing to share it with whoever, you know. And I think John and I both said to them, like, "Oh, my God, you guys are making us excited about being in Florida again." You know, because you can live here for a long time and forget how magical this place is. And, like, them picking up on hibiscus and the smell of the salt water, you know, and the, like, "I just want to feel sand." And it's like, oh, my God, it was contagious. Their enthusiasm was contagious. And I think as we reacted to that and just said, "Oh, my God, can we come with you? We want to be there when you find the beach." They were just like, "Sure, can you help us find the beach?" And we were like, "No."
Yeah, that puts you in an awkward position, right? Also weird, I'm sure, for them. It's like, oh yeah, you want to follow us, but you don't want to help us.
And it was, you know, it was 98 degrees and they're carrying all their backpacks and duffel bags and trying to walk aimlessly. They didn't have cell phones to like give them a GPS of where they were. They were just pop in a store and go, where's the beach? You know, and someone would point them that direction. And John and I were out there sweating our pants off being like, oh my God, can't we help them? You know, because once we got off the air conditioning bus, it was really, really, really hot walking around trying to find the damn beach. So
you and I have talked a lot about, you know, writers and when they do narrative work, how important it is to have a theme, how important it is to have something that's driving it that makes this particular story more universal than just, this is a story about these two people, right? And so this one, obviously, the dream was, you know, finding Florida and, you know, the escape from their dreary lives. So I was curious, I wanted you to talk a little bit about when did that pop into your head the minute you met them and you just thought, boy, they're the embodiment of, you know, escaping. Talk a little bit about that and how you ended up shaping a little section about Florida and the dream. And I wondered how you channeled that and how you chose what you chose to get in there.
So I was born in Florida, but we moved away when I was two. And my experience of Florida coming from Washington, D.C., Maryland, was riding the train to see my grandmother in Miami at Christmas every year. And I remember distinctly we would stop. There was this one stop like right near the border of Georgia and Florida where they gave you free little like orange juices, like welcome to Florida. And my mother would go, okay, girls, you can go in the bathroom and take off your tights. And it was like, woohoo, you know, like 8, 9-year-old little girl coming from cold, cold Washington, D.C., getting free little orange juice. And I got to take off my tights. I mean, that was the magic of Florida to me. And I think I grew up listening to Jimmy Buffett and really wanting to be, you know, in Margaritaville and like totally buying into that dream of like, all you have to wear all year long is flip flops and drink margaritas and catch your fish for dinner. And I love that dream, especially to get you through winter in bad places. And so I felt like these kids just embodied that, you know what I mean? They had no idea what Florida was other than SpongeBob and Finding Nemo and some postcards that his aunt had sent to them, you know, and they both were working these sort of like, you know, it felt like a John Cougar Mellencamp song in a way, like working at the Wendy's, got to get out of the small town, you know, go see the world. And Dan so much, the boy, he so much wanted to take care of this girl. Like he just was so, I got you, baby, you know, and they were on this adventure together. I think their excitement and their drive to like find paradise and escape, as you said, that was really what I knew from the beginning was going to be the theme of the story or the quest, you know. It was a quest, and that helped too. It was a quest because they didn't know how to get there. They didn't know what they were going to find. You know, it wasn't like, it was like getting the Wizard of Oz, you know, getting to the Emerald City. Like
that, I just encourage people to read the story and see how you pull up to that theme and then how you drop people right back down to it. I mean, because it's very quick and it doesn't take you long, but it's just enough to say, you know, yeah, this is, yeah, for all those people who dream of escaping their miserable lives and going somewhere where it's sunny and warm and you could dip your toe in the ocean, you know, and then you bring it back. And I was going to say, it's funny to hear you talk about overhearing them and getting caught up because some of their dialogue is just, it's like you couldn't have made it up. Like I wrote down the one, it was in Florida, they say you can eat oranges right off the trees. I'm thinking like, who are these kids? Like they're like, but they're so, I mean, it's sweet and it feels sort of naive and like, yeah, like they're on this adventure and like somebody should be calling their parents and letting them know that they've escaped. But like, you must have had so many interactions that you had a hard time trying to figure out which ones to use in the story.
Yeah, we had a lot more that we couldn't put in. And I struggled a little bit about how much of their background to put in because each of them had pretty interesting background stories. You know, I did think a lot about Jenna's mom because they'd been living with her mom and they just disappear in the middle of the night. And I was thinking like my boys were about the same age at that time. Like how would I feel to wake up and my daughter and her boyfriend are gone, you know? But on the other hand, I mean, I always ask people what they carry. I think that's a good takeaway for anybody. You bring everything you own from Wisconsin, but it only fits in your Hannah Montana backpack. What's in there, you know? And So going through the things that were important enough to them to bring. And then she also said, I also brought a picture of my mom, and she showed it to me. It was in her sock. You know, so clearly, like, she loved her mom enough to want to bring this picture of her mom. But I think I said to her, I'm not going to call your mom and rat you out, but I think you should call your mom. I think I did say that, like, as a mom, I think she would want to know that you're here and you're okay, you know.
I was just going to ask you about that. Did you talk to her mother, and did you end up talking to Aunt Helen?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I did talk to Aunt Helen, and her, you know, I think, I don't know, if Jenna had been 17 instead of 18, I might have called her mom. You know what I mean? I might have. She's 18, though. I felt like I would be outing her in a weird way. You know what I mean? So I had some trepidation and guilt about that. And Aunt Helen was just kind of like, What the hell? Like, Aunt Helen didn't know they were coming. She didn't know that he was on probation. She didn't know he was bringing a girlfriend. She didn't know they thought they could stay in her over 55 mobile home park, which they couldn't. They had no money. And she was just kind of like, what the hell are you doing here? You know, like, she was not the warm fuzzy of, oh, you've come home to Aunt Helen. Not at all, you know. And she raised him for a little while. And I got the feeling that she moved to Florida in part to escape him. She left him in foster care. And I have a feeling he was kind of a hard child, you know. And so She was a little bit like, what's happening, when he shows up on her doorstep with his girlfriend and no money, you know.
So it's interesting, you know, he's talking to you and telling you he's on probation, not supposed to leave the state. You know, these things, what's your moral dilemma there? You know, do you acknowledge something that makes the story even more interesting, but could potentially get him in trouble?
I put it on him. You know, I said, dude, if your probation officer sees that you're in Florida, aren't you going to get in trouble and sent back to jail? And he's like, my probation officer won't see this newspaper in Florida. And I said, well, someone else could. He's like, nah, it's fine. It's fine. And so, I mean, he probably didn't have the best reasoning skills. That maybe I shouldn't have left it up to him. But, you know, I told him what possibly could have happened, and he decided to go ahead and do it anyway. So I don't know. I don't know if that, we talked it over. My editor and I talked it over. I think we even talked about it with the lawyer for the paper, who said, you know, you don't have a responsibility to turn him in. But he should know that if he gets caught because of this, you know, you're culpable. And in the end, it wasn't that the probation officer saw the story at all. It was Aunt Helen turned him in. Aunt Helen got sick of them being there, and he was smoking pot at Aunt Helen's house. And Aunt Helen was like, hell to the no, probation officer, come and get him. And they extradited him back to Wisconsin, to the cold. But I felt a little relief, I have to say. I liked those kids. I did. I mean, they had their foibles and their bruises on their apple, but I really liked them, and I loved their passion for each other and enthusiasm, and I felt really bad when that happened. But I was super relieved it wasn't me that made them get sent away.
That's a good lesson, though, that the whole conversation, too, about, like, because that's, in this case, it was a probation. In other cases, I know you talk a lot to the sources of your story about the ramifications of talking to you. And, you know, that's dangerous, right? Because sometimes people might say, oh, well, I hadn't considered that, or, you know, I don't, too bad. Now I don't want to be in this story. But I do think it's a great practice, you know, the whole idea of, like, you know, people may not react well to, I mean, and a lot of people, of course, don't have something like this hanging over their heads, but, you know, they may be talking about a controversial topic. They may not be used to being in the news. And then, you know, because you know what readers are like and what some of the, you know, lovely trolls can be like, you know, making sure that people understand what they're putting themselves out there for. And I think most of the time people still go along with it, right? I mean, I think it's rare to have somebody say, oh, well, now I'll rethink it. But I think it's really, I don't know, it feels like the right thing to do for you as a journalist to stop for a minute and make sure they understand. Obviously, those who don't deal with journalists, what it means. And I'm sure, like, you know more about what happened to them after they, you know, reach the beach. They do reach the beach. But I wanted you to talk a little bit about why you chose to stop where you did.
I knew I wanted that scene to sort of end the story. Like, if the whole quest was to find the beach, the moment that they found the beach and did whatever they were going to do with the beach was going to be my climax, right? That was going to be my ending. And when she just jumped up, she just really like ran, they ran through the waves in their clothes because they didn't have a bathing suit. And she just like jumped up and straddled him. You know, like wrapped her arms and legs around him and they started kissing. And he pulls back and he's like, ooh, salty. You know, and I just thought that was the cutest thing. Like he'd never tasted salt water before and he tasted in her kisses, you know. And I love that. I thought, because this was part of love story too. I mean, I felt like it was a quest story or, you know, or a finding paradise story, but it was also a love story, you know, and I think that helped create the sense of place. But also I love when I can get taste into my stories. I love when I can get a taste into my story, you know, and anybody who's ever tasted salt water, that's hopefully going to remind you of what it tastes like and how it is romantic to kiss somebody in salt water. It really is. And so I think hopefully that would bring that back for people too.
You're going to send everybody out to the beach right now. So did you know all the mess with Aunt Helen before you published? Did you know that Aunt Helen was not happy to see them?
Yes, because I had called Aunt Helen before it published. I was trying to get whatever background I could, you know, and I knew she knew he was there. So I wasn't outing him to her, you know. I went to her trailer to interview her and he was there when I interviewed her in person. So
this was before to publish before she ratted him out.
Correct. And before he was smoking pot in her trailer. I think that was the last straw. I think she was willing to be like, all right, crash on my couch for a little while, go find a job. You know, he was looking for a job and so was she. And I think she was going to put up with them for a little bit until he was like, you know, disrespecting her in her eyes. But
yeah.
And do you know if the girl called her mother?
I don't know the answer to that. I know the probation officer came and brought him back, so they didn't go back together, but I don't know what happened to Jenna or how she got home.
Before we wrap up, I just got to go back to this whole idea of like, I think you've always had this great inclination, Lane, to go with it, like to go with the flow. Like if the story presents itself and you're like, you really don't hesitate that much to say, all right, there's clearly something here. I mean, you know, who knows? They could have gotten off the bus. Maybe they wander around. They never find the beach and your day is wasted. Because I feel like there are reporters who might talk themselves out of it, you know, who might say, oh, you know, I got 100 other things to do. I don't know if it's worth my day. You know, these kids look lost. You know, I don't know. So I just wonder where that instinct comes from.
I mean, I think this is probably both a good and bad part of my personality, but I'm always looking for other stories. I'm always have my radar on. So even when I should have been super focused on Stacy on the bus getting to the pizza place for work, I was like listening and looking and noticing other things, you know? And so I'm distracted by, is that a story? Is that a story? Is that a story? And sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes I should just completely just stay the course and do what I'm doing, you know? But one of my first tips for finding story ideas is ride the bus, right? And that, because I think you find so many different people in different walks of life, but you also have a captive audience, right? They're not going to walk away from you. There's nowhere they can go. So you have time to talk to them while they're there on their seat and enough to poke around and see, is there a story there, you know? And before they were going to get off at their next stop, we knew enough to know John and I, and it helped having him to check with too. You know, is this a story? Is this worth ditching? Stacy, do you mind if we ditch you? You know, can we come back tomorrow? And like, talking it out together to say like, this is a really damn good story. You know, this is a really cool, I don't know that other reporters would have thought it was a good story. You know, some little couple who wants to find the beach. What is that? You know, it's like a little slice of life, but to me it was really exciting and universal because almost everybody who comes to Florida has a first time I came to Florida story. You know, we're such a state of people who migrate here, who didn't grow up here, you know, who come here because it's magical. Or warm, at least. So I think, you know, I just always keep in my radar. I like to think of myself as a paramedic. I think good reporters are like paramedics. Like even when you're not on call, you should be watching out for ways that you can help or stories you can tell, you know?
Okay. So on that note, do definitely read this story when you get the chance, if you haven't already. It's just a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, you can find other episodes on pointer.org/right lane. And please join our Facebook group. This podcast was produced by Jesse Lauck. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.